We weren't going to start without you.
Thank you.
Great to see everybody tonight. We're going to begin class with a word of prayer. Jeff's going to lead us to get us started, then we'll jump into our study. Jeff?
All right, let's pray. Father in heaven, we're thankful for tonight, thankful for the opportunity to regather as your people in the name of your Son. May we never take for granted who we are because of him and the great opportunity we have to think about your word together and to be encouraged one to another by both our presence and our words to each other. Bless our hour this evening, Father, as we visit with Philip and think about zeal. And then as we leave this place, may we be even better and fit servants of you in a fallen world. Thank you for Jesus. It's in his name we offer this prayer. And amen.
Amen. Great to see everybody tonight. We've got a really great crowd for the class. Really appreciate you carving out this time to be in the Lord's presence and with his people. It occurred to me, Jeff, as I was prepping this, that this is probably going to be the last time that we do sort of a public thing on our theme. There'll still be some
that's
Bible reading stuff
right.
going on, but this will be...
We've got a couple of podcasts left, but that's about it.
That's about it for our theme for 2022. So no pressure, Philip, but you really need to make this good tonight because we're wrapping this thing up. As I told y'all this morning, when we began talking about doing something on zeal for this year, Philip was on our hearts right away because of the time and the study that he has devoted to that. Some of you, I know, have been through his workbook, and we may have even done that in a class or two over the course of the year. And so we're really excited that he can be with us for this last segment to think about some other parts of this important discussion we've been having this year. I am curious, just sort of as a starting point, Philip, about what got you started on what I think we would all acknowledge is kind of a really narrow topic. I mean, you start thinking about things to talk about in the Bible, there's all kinds of territory, and boy, you really landed hard on zeal.
Well, and a preacher friend was like, I don't think that there's enough verses about that, you know, for you to have a class on zeal. And you start looking at it, and yeah, there's a few key verses, obviously, that address and speak about zeal, but there's so many interconnected concepts, you know, hundreds of passages and verses that really reference the idea of what God's looking for in his people. And what got me going on that was you guys, you know, coming to Kleinwood and having people say, oh, well, we love your energy or your enthusiasm or whatever. And you look and you say, people would say, don't lose your enthusiasm. I didn't know how to not lose my enthusiasm.
Right.
We see too many lukewarm Christians and, honestly, lukewarm preachers. And you think, well, if we're going to hold on to our zeal, if we're going to hold on to that enthusiasm, that love for the Lord, what does the Bible actually say about that? And so I don't think I even started with, let me find a concordance and skip to the Z's. It was much more of, how does the Bible begin to address this and describe it? And it changed my thinking. And then you start looking and saying, oh, wait, God does have so much to say about this. And then, like in almost a fearful or a startling way to go, and some really clear expectations to say, no, we're all supposed to be working towards this. And it's been so interesting, different congregations that we talk with or study with on this subject, that people's knee-jerk reaction is we can't all be camp counselors. We can't all be the pep rally in the high school Devo, and we're not supposed to be. But there is just such a wide range of pictures of zeal in the New Testament and the Old Testament, and then some complicated questions that came out of it. What about zeal with violence, and what about zeal over here with these other things? I wanted to know not just how to not lose my zeal, but how to help others with that, and how to have a zeal that was more centered around the kind of zeal Jesus had than just the persecutor that Paul was, or some of those things.
I think that's an idea that's worth unpacking just a little bit here at the beginning, that you mentioned that, you didn't say it exactly like this, but zeal isn't just being the cheerleader at the pep rally. You do have a natural enthusiasm about you. All of us who are friends with you know that. And I thought I was hearing you say, That ain't really what it is.
It's not the
zeal. Because I think about my dad, who is not the cheerleader at the pep rally. My dad's the quiet guy that sits in the corner at the party. And yet that doesn't mean he isn't zealous.
Agreed.
So unpack that a little bit more, how you see the difference.
Well, because you could have
two people who are expressing zeal but in very different ways.
Yeah, thank you for elaborating on that. Let's look at Titus for just a second. Titus chapter 2, verse 12 and verse 13. I'm sure you guys have been studying verse 14 about being zealous for good deeds, but there seems to be this picture, and I've talked about this kind of in these three components, but you get that directly from the text. In verse 12, instructing us to deny ungodliness and worldly desires. Nothing is going to wreck a Christian zeal more than getting entangled in these worldly desires and ungodliness. You're just going to be drowning when those things kick in. And then this third component, to live sensibly, righteously, and godly in the present age. Paul is wanting Titus to keep that focus not only on what he's avoiding, but what he's moving towards and the character that Christ has shown. And then that third thing, which with this, one of the songs this morning, Draw Me Nearer, that's this whole concept in verse 13, looking for the blessed hope and the appearing of the glory of our great God and Savior Christ Jesus. That it's not just behavior modification. God is asking for more than that. He's saying, don't you want to be with me? Don't you want to be near to me? How are you thinking about that? We look forward to seeing our family at Thanksgiving or Christmas or whatever occasion. You're looking for this hope. And when those three things are working in conjunction, it's just like starting a fire in your fireplace. Some sparks, they just naturally occur because God knows the way he built our hearts. And this zeal starts to grow.
And so in a sense, what we're really talking about, you know, even to use your camp counselor illustration a second ago, we're not talking about, you know, being extroverted and the enthusiastic right. extrovert. What we're talking about is the deep desires that animate us to the point that you mentioned, like David, your dad, who you would still qualify as zealous, even though he's kind of the introverted guy in the corner. But the truth of the matter is, and we've all known people like this, who they're introverted, maybe they're quiet, but when you touch that third rail, you see a side of them you didn't realize is there, and you say, okay, that's what's important to them. That's what really motivates them. That's the fire that guides them, that burns, that energizes them. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about zeal, is not whether you're, you know, how quiet or outgoing right. you are. We're talking about what at the deepest level literally animates you.
Yeah, what do you care about?
Right.
You know, and we care about each other's souls. We care about our friendships and relationships. But man, like, I care. I care about helping you know God. And so I'll run around the auditorium and shake 100 hands. And Tracy, my introvert, Tracy will have two conversations. And right. we'll get in the car and she'll say, yeah, but brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so, this is what they're dealing with. And her zeal is coming out and having that deeper conversation.
That's right.
So underneath all of that is a person who is stirred for God and for his will, but that stirring evidences itself outwardly in some different ways. I do think we do get hung up too much on the outward expressions of it and yeah. not enough on what's underneath that makes us be that way.
And what we think about, you know, how many times did David have to kill Goliath? Really just the one. I mean, he had other battles to fight. But God is not asking us to crank that outward expression up to 11 and then hold it there until your, you know, head hits the grave. You are going to be called to demonstrate and exercise that zeal, sometimes in ways you're prepared for, sometimes in ways you're not. But when there's that underlying, animating,
right.
I want to please God,
right.
that's what we're trying to foster. That's what we're trying to imitate from Christ.
And so one of the things we really wanted to emphasize tonight is we're looking toward the end of the year and preparing to move on to a different focus in 2023 is in some ways kind of the negative side of this, where we haven't spent a lot of time, and that is thinking about couple of things that discourage us and douse our zeal,
right.
or things that get in the way and hinder us. You were talking when you began all of this about people saying not to lose your zeal, and so that idea of enduring zeal for the Lord. There are some obstacles as we try to do that. One of them, I think, is the problem of the to-do list. And so we start talking about being passionate for God, for His work, and someone's going to say, great, thanks. Do you want to see what I have to do next week? And how do I find time to pursue these things I need to do for the Lord when I already got a list that's full, more to do than I have time to do?
Yeah.
So what's the answer to that? When my to-do list is full, how do I have time to be zealous for the things that God wants me to do?
Really good. Really good question. And I think that's something that we all struggle with. You can be a fully supported evangelist, right, and still struggle to find that. And just to find that time and,
right.
and everything that you're trying to juggle. And we've all been right there. You know, obviously, there's some prioritization that comes into that answer. And I think most of us get that in trying to find, well, am I giving myself to the highest and the best use of my time? But as we think about that to-do list and that sense of being overwhelmed, it is really helpful to come back and go, okay, now there's things that God expects of me. I'm gonna make sure that I'm doing those things that are good and right in His eyes. But I'm not putting more on me than God expects of me. I think that's gonna be a big part of it. Like Paul himself could only be so many places at once. Apollos was being urged,
right
to go visit. Was it the Corinthians?
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what, not at this time.
And even Jesus is sitting there withdrawing from people who wanted healing and audiences, because in his humanity, he's limited on how much he can do.
Right. Right. So acknowledging those constraints can actually then be very focusing. To say what matters the most, because if pleasing the Lord matters the most to me, then where am I uniquely responsible for pleasing today? What are the areas that I'm most responsible for? What are the areas that I have the most control over? And then maybe what are the areas where I have a little less control or a little less influence, but someone else can really excel in that particular responsibility, and trying to discern through that. It's an important part of not letting yourself get overwhelmed. And just that discernment to begin to, I guess, almost triage that list and get the most important things to the top.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, about what's under the list. Because I'm fearful sometimes that we think, well, the problem is I need to manage my list better. Or I need a new device. Maybe the Apple phone 16 will finally help me manage my schedule right. When in reality, the problem probably is underneath the to-do list and the schedule. And the problem is a heart problem, that my heart is not set on the right things.
Well, if we think about Titus for a minute, he's one of the most zealous people in the New Testament. And here he is on the island of Crete. And what has he got to do? He's got to appoint elders. Any evangelist will tell you that is one of the hardest jobs you can do.
Dangerous.
And he's got to do it in multiple cities.
Yeah.
He's got to travel across this island. And then after he's appointing elders, he's got to work on multi-generation relationships. That's going to be really hard. In chapter 3, he's got to get them off of like this whole mentality of the island from Crete that's described in chapter 1 and get them more on this fruitful mentality that's described in chapter 3. It's a huge to-do list for Titus, a young Christian evangelist. But he's decided, okay, I'm going to do this with the Lord's help. And that it's not all on me, but it's going to be looking for what doors God is going to open in each of those churches across the island. And then Paul's ultimately going to say, and now, like, it's time for you to go. It's time for you to go somewhere else. So we just have to contribute what we can contribute to that, whether it's a teen devo or a vacation Bible school or a youth weekend. No one person contributes all of it. We've got to contribute that part.
And I know that's one of the things that we talked about, like when we did our podcast on Acts 6. Remember, when we talked about, you know, the apostles, when there was that problem with the widows, you know, reminding, that's where they picked those 7 men to minister to the widows, because the apostles recognized their best role with their limited time is handling the word and prayer, you know, doing their apostolic work. But I'll tell you, you know, listening, you talk about that, Philip, one of the things that makes me think of is, you know, for a lot of us, you know, at peak COVID in 2020, when everything shut down and we cleaned our lives out. And you know, you mentioned, Dave, what's underneath our busyness. That's a big part of our problem is we're both trying to build our own kingdom and God's kingdom. And the priorities get out of whack. And so because I want to have the kind of life I want to have, or teach my children to have a certain amount of comfort or enjoyment in this life, And yet we still know we need to be doing God's kingdom. The truth of the matter is I think sometimes we're called a little bit because we want both kingdoms. We want a foot in the world. We want a part of God's kingdom as well. And the truth of the matter is, while we can still get burned out or frustrated with trying to build God's kingdom and do it all, most of us, the real issue is we don't want to cut back on our comfortable lives in this world for the sake of the kingdom.
Let me jump off of that for a second. So I spent 3 years studying zeal before I put the workbook together. And then it's been 10 years since that was published. But I kept studying it, right? There's more questions and there's more things to go through. And I came across this quote that was just awesome. This was speaking, kind of describing Paul. A zealous person in Christianity is preeminently a person of one thing. It's not enough to say that they are earnest or strong, uncompromising, meticulous, wholehearted, and fervent in spirit. But they only see one thing, they care for one thing, they live for one thing, they are swallowed up in one thing. That one thing is to please God. Whether they live or whether they die, whether they are healthy or sick, rich or poor, pleasing men or giving offense, whether they are thought wise or foolish, accused or praised, whether they get honor or shame, all this the zealous person cares nothing of. They have a passion for one thing. That one thing is to please God and to advance His glory. If they are consumed in the very burning of their passion for God, they don't care. They are content. They feel that like a candle, they were made to burn. And if they are consumed in that burning, then they have only done the work for which God has appointed them. That hit me like a 2x4. And I'm like, I've studied this. I've thought about this. But when I read that, I was like, okay, like I'm supposed to be used up. And it makes me think of Jesus saying, when you've done everything the master has commanded you, I'm just an unprofitable servant. That was that mentality that's being developed there, that the one thing that matters is His glory. And if I can teach, I will. But if I can't, I'll sing. And if I can't sing, I'll pray. And if I can't pray, I will meditate. Like, but I'm going to devote myself to that one thing. And you can do that with a full-time job and family. You don't have to quit your job and become an evangelist overseas, right? God is glorified in the raising of those children. God is glorified in that example and light shining in your office environment and on your street with your neighbors. Like, and choosing to make that our one thing in life goes a long way towards ordering that to-do list.
I thought about our theme from 2021.
Oh, yeah.
I press on, right? And, you know, part of that is Philippians 3, where it says, one thing I do. But I'm reminded that earlier in there, he talks, for example, in Philippians 3, verse 8, how I suffered the loss of everything.
Right.
That it's rubbish to me.
Yep.
That I may gain Christ.
Right.
And so I do think there is sometimes a failure to recognize what has ultimate value, which takes us back to Titus 2 and verse 13, looking for the blessed hope. And that's really the question, brothers and sisters. What am I looking for? Am I looking for my best life now, right?
Yep.
Or am I looking for heaven and being with Jesus in heaven? And that sort of adjusts things down here. And if we could just be brutal about this for a minute. If your kids are too busy with sports or band or another activity to come to Bible class on Wednesday, you're not doing Philippians 3, folks. That does not mean I'm focused on the one thing. It means I'm focused on my best life now, right?
Can I say, I have found that so, like, we can say that, and I've said that. It is so deceptive to see how our schedules get full when we thought we were being more moderate. So I'm thinking of a family with three kids, and they let this one play this sport, and this one play this sport, and this one play this sport. And they're saying, like, hey, they're each only doing one extracurricular. But one extracurricular across all three kids.
Yeah. Starts getting busy.
In Atlanta, anything you sign up for, they want everything. Yeah. They want it to be your only thing, right? And I know it can't be that much different here. And it's actually heartbreaking that you'll text different families and say, please join us for this. Please come over to the house. Please let's get our kids together. And oh, I can't because of this. And I can't because of that. I just think that
it's... What are we saying no to?
Yeah, we are getting ourselves overbooked while thinking that we're underbooked. But the reality of our schedule is no, we're far more overbooked than we think.
Yeah, yeah. I think you have to ponder what's underneath all of that. And that is my life really about this one thing? That in the end, I want to be with Him in heaven. I want my kids to be with Him in heaven. And when the underneath part is right, then that works its way up into this plant that grows. And it's one that, well, suddenly we find the time for the things that are really important to us. I want to move on and I want to direct our study toward another obstacle to this enduring zeal. Before I do that, you do see the number on the slide, right? If y'all want to shoot a question to us, text it in and it'll work its way through the circuitry up here to me. But and we'll try to work in as much of those as we can. Let's talk about the problem of burnout, because I think even people who are, in fact, sometimes because people are very dedicated to the Lord and really invested, whether it's because of the length or the troubles along the way or whatever, they wind up getting to this place where they're ready to throw up their hands and quit. And whether that's loss of zeal or something else we want to talk about, there are people who really do just get to that place where they're burned out.
So you know who it makes me think of biblically is Noah. Like, that had to be a huge job. It was a huge job where the souls of his family hinged on, right, the way Hebrews describes it, that he prepares an ark for the salvation of his household. That was a huge job. And there had to be days that, you know, the hammer wasn't working right, or the son that he was counting on, you know, hurts himself and is injured. Like, that was just a tremendous job. And the boat could have been smaller if it was just the eight of them, but he's got to make a boat big enough for all of the animals. There's so much going on there. And it could have been easy to get burnt out. And there's so many people throughout the Old and New Testament that they do struggle with burnout, right? Because the task is either a large task or the duration of time
long
involved.
A long task,
a complex task. And the thing I always, because I get asked more about burnout than any other zeal question. If I go to a gospel meeting on zeal, people hang out and wait, and they want to say, this is the burnout I am struggling with. Always more questions. So the thing I want Kynewood to hear is, usually, not always, usually, it is strong Christians that struggle with burnout. Because weak people give up at the first sign of trouble. Weak people are like, well, I'm not doing that. That looks awful, right? But zealous Christians will go, well, if that's where I'm needed, let me give it a try.
It'll work.
Yeah, and they're gonna put themselves down, and they're going to try to learn the new thing they need to learn and get the new tools they need to get, and they're going to labor and push and grind away at this, kind of hoping that someone will help, but not necessarily waving a flag for that.
Right.
And to everybody else, it looks like, well, they've got that under control. That deacon's been doing it for 15 years, and that deacon does a great job. And if you could ask that deacon in a private, honest moment, he would go, will somebody else please lock up the building? You know, like, he would just tell you, like, I'm getting a little burnt out here. And so I think it's important for us to unpack, what do we mean when we say burnout? Usually it affects strong Christians who have been holding on through a difficult season, but they've been holding on, and it's just this lengthy kind of pressure, this lengthy difficulty that's different than just being tired. And I think about a basketball. Basketballs are made to bounce back. I don't know if I've said this before. They're made to bounce back, but you deflate the same basketball, and when it hits the ground, it just thuds. And we, when we're burnt out, we've been bouncing for so long that we just get deflated. And we have to stop and recognize it. And we have to stop and say, so what fills me back up? What reinflates me? Because God has shown us that life is not going to be a walk in the park. There's going to be hard things that we're going to come up against, and we need that resilience. But we have to think about how we get reinflated.
Yeah, it isn't always about schedule either. I think typically when we think about burnout, we think about someone who has a lot to do and they just get tired because day by day, I'm just doing so much. I think that can be a problem. But I think it can also be just a problem of being discouraged in your work. The class you were teaching, we've all had this experience, right?
Yes.
It was just bad.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just that the students thought it was bad.
It was that we knew.
You knew it was bad.
It was bad.
Going home. It's like, you know, driving home, your wife's in the class, and you say, well, how was that? And she said, it was a really good effort.
Yeah, right.
I mean, you know, right?
Yeah. Sometimes the plane comes in for a landing, and sometimes it just like runs off the runway.
Yeah. And then you get enough of those. You take enough hits.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, again, it's not about busyness. It's about loss of will. You know, I've tried and failed, and I'm just tired of trying.
Yeah, burnout is not, like you said, tiredness. Burnout is, and I'm done, or I'm thinking about being done. I'm ready to throw in the towel. That's what we're talking about burnout.
And it's a feeling that I know this can't keep going. Like, this is unsustainable. I think that's part of what Moses confronts when Jethro has to say, Moses, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You're exhausting yourself. You're exhausting the people. Everybody's waiting all day to hear what you have to say about this. Even at Florida College, when I was one of the editors of the yearbook, I was the bottleneck. Everything had to come through the editor, and I had made a huge mistake in that.
Right.
And thankfully, the yearbook advisor pulled me aside. He's like, you are going to destroy yourself, and you're going to frustrate the entire yearbook staff. And we have to remove ourselves from that bottleneck, whether it's Moses, or I think Elijah is one that we often think about.
Correct.
Yeah, Elijah is really interesting because, you know, he kind of gets to that place where he decides, nobody else here cares about this.
Right.
And I think as a disciple in a church family, that's a really easy place to get. Maybe you've tried this and it just hasn't gone over. And maybe you've been in a church for 10 years and you've been trying to encourage evangelism, or you've been trying to encourage some new thing in the Bible class, and you just haven't gotten any traction over all that time. And you're kind of like Elijah. You say, I am the only one here that cares about this, and I can't make any progress. And so you give up.
Yeah, you
go hide in a cave.
Right, and hopefully you're doing that to pray, which is the one thing he gets right, you know? But there's no doubt he's struggling with burnout there after this amazing, miraculous event on Mount Carmel, where it should have been that the prophets of Baal were all shown to be false,
right,
and the one true God. Now, everybody's going to get it, and everybody's going to repent, right? And it just doesn't play out that way.
Yep. Yeah, the other thing that ought to be weighed into this is the fact that there are always seasons. So, you know, one of the things that I discovered, I met with a group of preachers in January of 21. We had a group of guys here, about 12 of them. And I decided, since we'd all done almost a year of COVID, just to sort of test the waters and see how they were doing. Oh my goodness. I just raised the issue. So how are y'all coping with all of the problems going along with COVID? It was like someone had opened the fire hydrant.
The body language in the room was
staggering. Oh my goodness,
yes.
Yeah, the guys just started pouring out. I think we went on for an hour and a half of guys just pouring out and pouring out their frustrations, how tired they were. It literally was this season had just extracted all the energy from them. And I got to tell you, the last couple of years, I've heard more preachers and more elders talk about resigning than I have throughout all the other years that I've been preaching. And I think it's burnout.
It is. And let's go to a Titus passage again, 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Because I know we were going to say maybe some more about Elijah, and we can circle back, but the way you describe that, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 5 through 7, even when we came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest. We were afflicted on every side, conflicts without and fears within. If you want to talk about a good, strong Christian struggling with burnout, here's Paul, and we don't think about him getting burnt out, but he has got conflicts without and fears within. Verse 6, but God who comforts the depressed comforted us by the coming of Titus. And not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you as he reported to us. Now let me just change what the text says for a minute. As he reported to us that everything at Corinth is fine and there are no problems, and he brings a totally good report back. No. See, sometimes I think that when we're struggling with burnout, and we're trying to help somebody and like bear this burden with them, we feel like we have to come across like a Hallmark card, that we're just going to come in with a ray of sunshine and everything's going to be okay. That is not actually what reinflates most people. Titus, I think, comes back with an honest evaluation of where things stand at Corinth. And there are still mature issues that have to be settled, but he is able to bring the hope back. Paul, they haven't given up on you, and they haven't given up on the Lord. He says, he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. And whether it's Moses talking to Jethro, or Elijah talking to the Lord, or Paul talking to Titus, or Philip calling David on a bad day, we have to talk to somebody, and they have to help kind of reshift our thinking to see a picture that is more than we can just see when we're that low.
So it's interesting, as we've been talking, that there have been about four questions pop up here.
Okay.
That all have to do with this last category we want to address. So I think all of you are saying, yeah, we get it. We're burned out. Tell us what to do about it. So, yeah. And that's literally what's popped up. There was a question about, you know, how do we maintain our zeal in a world that's increasingly hostile to us? How do I maintain my zeal when I've dealt with tragedy in my life, lost a loved one, lost a spouse? What about Christians who are older and they're at the end of their years of service? In other words, it's a retirement from God. And then someone says, can you speak on mother burnout? Really? Three guys sitting on the stage, y'all want us to talk about mother burnout? Okay. Jeff will address that at the end. So I really think y'all are shouting at us saying, tell us what to do about this.
Get to the last category.
And
here.
So we've got, yeah, we've got about 20 minutes, 19 minutes left. Why don't we spend some time working through some answers? I mean, would you just get to that place? And listen, have a lot of us been there in the last year or so post-COVID? You know, the family controversies, and I'm talking literal physical families and church families, some churches even divided, the national division that's taken place, the curves that church groups have been, church families have been thrown as we've tried to figure out worship and coming together and mask and no mask and all that stuff. It's been a season. And I think a lot of people over the last year have just been said, man, I'm just really tired. Right. I'm kind of content to come sit in the pew.
Right.
So what do we do about it?
So you need to think about you, because Tracy and I are different, right? For me, it's going to be people, right? I'm the extrovert, and I get a lot of energy from people. And so one of the things that I'm going to immediately say if you're an extrovert is you need to be with the same small group of people for at least 8 weeks. And I don't mean every single day, but kind of on a weekly basis. Like the Friday men's breakfast that we do, we've kind of joked that the attendance has been up and the attendance has been down during COVID. And I just finally told one of the elders, don't you understand that this is for me? Like, I need this. It's the guys that I have breakfast with on Friday that do fill me back up, that keep me thinking about other things beyond just kind of collapsing in and only thinking about myself or my family or those kind of things. So, you know, some of us are extroverts and you literally, you know, you reinflate when you're with people. Well, then it's time to like have that friendship and get in that routine where you say, hey, like we need to have breakfast on a weekly basis for a little while. Or we need to have this phone call, right? We need to have this phone call for 15 minutes every Thursday evening. Whatever it is, when I'm driving home from work, your phone is gonna ring. We need some of those connections. Even with Elijah, God is telling him, hey, you are not alone. And we've got to remember that we are not alone in this. But people can't help bear our burdens if we don't let them know how we really feel.
And I really think that those relationships are valuable. But I would add this caveat, provided that we recognize that in each other and provide what is needed and not a pity party. Because it's really easy to get on the phone and have, or texting each other and have, ain't it bad? Let's talk about how bad it is.
Right.
Let's talk about how
right.
upset we are,
right.
which does what?
Right.
That
reinforces.
Just, yeah, it reinforces and make it worse. And sometimes I've caught myself doing that and thought, well, I didn't help him at all. Right. I just reinforce it as bad. How does he feel after getting off the phone?
Well, and even, you know, we used Elijah earlier, but part of what happens with Elijah is, you know, God's session with Elijah is, first of all, why are you here, Elijah? And Elijah goes through a pity party of, you know, and the pity party is I, you know, all that I have done. And God's eventual solution to Elijah after the repeated, why are you here, and Elijah, you know, he sends him back to work. I mean, God's answer to Elijah is not to coddle him in this, but to put him back to work. Because part of what Elijah's got to learn to do is focus less on himself and be more dependent upon God, is, I think, part of that lesson. And so, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, God doesn't coddle Elijah. He speaks a hard truth to him, actually, in that story.
So let me break it into really, really practical and actionable things. When I've talked about zeal, we've compared it to a spiritual fire, because there's a little bit of that in the Greek.
Yeah.
To have a fire, you need some logs, you need oxygen, you need a heat source. And we need to look at ourselves and say, which of the three am I missing? Am I getting further from God? Am I getting further from my heat source? Is my attendance down? Is my daily Bible reading down? Is my prayer life down? Like, am I getting further from God? If that's the one, then fix that. Second one is character. That's like the logs in the fire. What is it that I can do to grow in my humility or my patience or my whatever, some characteristic? Am I giving active attention? Maybe it just needs to be a topical Bible reading that you're doing, but am I growing my character? And the third one is, what is about my environment? Anytime my family went camping, we could pick the weekend it was going to rain. I mean, and you know, it's really bummer to try to roast marshmallows in the rain. And it is really hard to stir up a spiritual fire when the environment we are in is trying to suffocate us. And we may have to look at our environment and say, I just need to change something about that environment short term. I'm not trying to blow up my whole life, but I'm just trying to say, I got to do something different here with this environment. And if you kind of walk through those three things, you see some of that in 2 Timothy. If you look at 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6, Timothy has a big job. He has a hard job. And what's even worse is that 2 Timothy is the book where Paul names names, right? All these other preachers are abandoning sound doctrine, and they're abandoning these things. And it had to be so discouraging to Timothy to feel like, does anybody else care about the gospel? And Paul says to Timothy in verse 6, I remind you to rekindle or kindle afresh the gift of God. If we had a fire in a fireplace in our house and we decided, hey, we're going to stay up a little longer, we're going to watch a movie together, and we don't want that fire to go out quite yet, we would get a poker and we would start stirring up those coals, and we would add a couple logs there. And I think Paul is telling Timothy, hey, in this letter, I'm going to show you some things to stir you back up. And it began with Paul saying, dude, I know you. I know this is hard, but I also know you're up to this.
Right.
And there's some big work for you to still do. So come back to who you are and where this faith began from your grandmother and your mom. Come back to the scriptures that were God-breathed. Like, come back to those things. And just to hear that from someone that wasn't throwing him a pity party, but that actually knew how to energize Timothy for the work ahead, is super powerful.
Yeah. In fact, this is counterintuitive. I think, at least for us sometimes, that it almost be that we need someone in those moments to admonish us. I think some of the things when I have been discouraged that helped me most is someone who said, yeah, that's the way it is. Get up and move on.
Well, see, and that's the thing, because at the end of the day, sometimes, you know, and I don't know who asked the questions, and maybe this is not what whoever asked this, their motive or what they're looking for, but the reality is, sometimes the answer is not that it's going to go away. The issue is, we're going to get, you know, helpers, you know, there are going to be people God's going to bring into our life to bear burdens with us. I mean, literally with Elijah, it was go call Elisha. I mean, go get somebody to help you with this. Moses gets his helpers. It's not that the burden's going to go away, but we might get people to help us carry the burden. So part of it's just expectations. You know, your point of, you know, this is what it is, almost, is what I hear in what you just said, David. That's part of the challenge, is setting the expectations rightly, that when we are serving God, you know, tiredness is part of it. That's not burnout necessarily. It's when I'm ready to throw in the towel. How do I stop from throwing in the towel? It's what you're saying. It's what Philip's saying. But being realistic about the fact that serving God is a wearying thing, but that's part of the blessing, because we learn to depend upon God when we're most tired.
Well, and I love the question that was texted in. that asks, but what about when our culture is getting so much further from God?
Yeah.
Well, I think Crete was, Cretans are always liars, evil beasts, and lazy gluttons.
Yeah.
And Paul told Timothy, evil men and imposters will proceed from bad to worse. So it is going to be hard. But I have a friend named Jason back home, and he says, you know, my corporate job, he said, things are getting darker and darker in this industry all the time. He said, but it's also making the choice between right and wrong more clear and more vivid than ever before. And we're going to have visitors to the congregation that are looking for that light. We're going to have conversations with someone that you never expected to nudge you from the cubicle next door and go like, can you believe this policy? And you thought, oh, wow, guys, that's your open door. That's your opportunity. And when we think about what we're doing here with the zeal and dealing with the burnout and everything, it's so good to remember that sowing and harvesting are always different seasons. And if we can sow even in these seasons, the harvest is coming. We had a thing where we were trying to have home Bible studies, and we had invited, and no one was coming. But then almost 2 years later, one of my neighbors was like, I'm ready. We've done a thing where we match up our high school students with a mentor. And for a little while, the elders have been like, I don't know. What difference is this really making for some of the high school students? Listen, the goal was not just to have these amazing relationships with 15-year-olds. The goal was when they're in college and they have a question they don't want to ask mom and dad, will they remember their high school mentor? And it was awesome. Last month, I had three of my young men call in a 36-hour period, all about different subjects. Best part of my whole week. Because they knew they could talk to somebody. But I was their mentor like 4 years ago. So we're going to sow and we're going to harvest in different seasons. And I think there is a great energy and a rekindling to remember that what Timothy was doing, what Titus was doing, you're planting some seeds now. And you're not going to immediately see those outcomes, but plant them anyway.
So that leads me to a broader character, a broader point rather, that I think is worth considering. And that is that we don't always have a good perspective when we've been working hard and we're tired or we're taking a beating and we're discouraged. And as a result of that, we don't see the good that may also be there, which brings me back to the Elijah story. Mm-hmm. Because when Elijah goes to God, Elijah's saying, there is nobody left. And that wasn't true. There were thousands left. So what's going on? How could it be that Elijah says, I'm the only one, when in reality, God had thousands?
Yeah.
And the answer is his vision was cloudy. He wasn't seeing clearly. And I think that happens to us in seasons of burnout. I think we get down, we get discouraged, and it sort of warps our perspective on things. And so part of this, I think, is to sort of make ourselves see the good. So we'll have preacher talk behind y'all's back. Actually right in front of you. But I know that both of you guys are going to agree with what I'm about to say. You've taken a hit. Something has really, you know, knocked your legs out from under you. And you're sitting at your desk on Monday morning and you're thinking, okay, but wait. There is so much good here that I need to see.
That's right.
And I've had to remind myself about that at different seasons. So let's talk a little bit about how burnout warps your perspective on things.
What I've had to literally do is go back through my emails, my text messages, and my calendar and say, because I feel like, have I done anything? Have I made any difference? So much of spiritual work, not just the preachers, all of our spiritual work is mostly invisible. It's intangible. It's in the heart. It's in the mind, right? And I'll just have to go back through emails, text, and calendar, and just I'll look at the last 6 months. And if I will stop and make that list, I can say, oh, Satan was going for something here. Satan was trying to blind me
right.
to those good things.
That belongs that on the list. Remember, the adversary has a hand in this.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And what is something we especially have to be on guard about with burnout is bitterness. This is the time that Satan wants roots of bitterness to get in there, where you go like, yeah, I tried that. It was awful. And the other teacher criticized what I did, or the elders criticized what I did. And don't ever ask me to do that again. We cannot let bitterness creep in. during those times of burnout. We need, and it's not naive. There's tangible good to look at. And just that's what God was pointing Elijah to.
Yeah. And,
can I say one more thing?
Oh, of course. Well, it's your
so
night,
Nehemiah,
bud.
Right? With Nehemiah, when everybody was criticizing Nehemiah and they said, everything you're trying to build is just worthless and it's going to fall over, he tells his critics, I am doing a great work and I cannot come down. And to whoever texted about the moms, moms, you are doing a great work and you cannot come down. You don't have to fit in with everybody else on your street. It does not have to be Pinterest perfect. You are doing a great work. Don't come down from that. And it pays off in other seasons.
I wanted us to do that because I made the joke about three guys on the stage talking to moms who are struggling.
But they juggle so much.
Yeah, but since we got asked, okay, no judgment zone here. I think young mothers deserve an answer to that question.
Sure.
Because you think about a mom with two or three little kids who's trying to be a good mother to her children, and I don't even want to ponder what an ordeal that is. But on top of that, she's trying to be a good servant of Jesus. And if she has a real good, genuine heart, when we get up and preach sermons about the things we need to be doing for the Lord, she's sitting there saying, okay, I need to add to my to-do list.
Right. I was just trying to pour a bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
Well, right. The irony being, though, the most important thing a mom is doing for Jesus right now is raising her children. Because those children aren't members of the church. They've not obeyed the gospel. Literally, evangelism starts at home. You want to save the world, start with your own kids.
Absolutely.
And so the most important thing moms need to be doing, and then when you get, again, the perspective right, and you focus on the highest priorities, at the end of the day, 20 or 30 years from now, moms, all you're going to care about is, are your kids faithful? And did they see that that was the priority to how I'm raising them? Or are my kids looking at the priority is, I like the phrase, Pinterest perfect, but the appearance of the home, the perfection of the meals, which are nice things, but they're not the Mary and Martha, right? They're not the highest things.
Yep.
And
yep.
So at the end of the day, you're serving God by raising your kids. Keep that first.
Yeah. And don't compare yourself to the other mom.
No.
Right?
Which is the worst thing. Moms, I don't know. I've picked up the sense that women, moms, are hard on each other. And that's the thing, too, by the way. And I cut you
Jeff
off.
Jeff said that, not me.
But you mentioned seasons, Philip. The challenge of motherhood is... If there's fear there because you're sowing now when they're little, you're not going to see the harvest 18, 20, 25 when they make their choice of a spouse, etc. And so there's this fear and there's this, did I do it right? Did I do enough? You wait a long time for the harvest. I think that adds to the...
I do want to seize on that season idea because was thinking about that too.
Yeah.
If I could offer encouragement to a mom with little kids, the thing that I would say to you is you're going to turn around twice and you're going to be saying, I wish they were still at home where I could keep an eye on them. I think Heidi and I would join me in saying, the season is gone before you know it. And every empty nester sitting in this crowd tonight knows you wake up one morning and it's just the two of you in the house and you think, what happened to that season? I know it does not feel that way some days at your house, but it is a season that's going to pass. So I'm with you. I agree. Don't be reluctant about the time you invest in this work at this season.
That's right.
That is the job.
There are plenty of other years and opportunities, Lord willing, to do some of these other things on the list, but you've only got one shot at the kids.
What we've said is that when the kids are gone, that's when I can go overseas, right? I can take a weekend to come to Texas, but right now, this is what we can do. And what I would say to the moms is, like, okay, so maybe yours are really little and this is not your season to be teaching for an entire quarter. But maybe it is your season to teach only at VBS. Or maybe it's not even your season to teach at VBS, but it's your season to teach the afternoon Devo for four kids or eight kids. Like, find what you can do in that season because God isn't asking more of us than what we can do in that season. And remember that there are other seasons.
Yep. I think that's right. The other thing I would add just to the end of this, because we're just about out of time, we have 1 minute literally, and that is when you are burnt out and discouraged, the answer to it is to do something, because you will not feel your way into a better way of acting, but you can act your way into a better way of feeling. And I think sometimes that's where we get. We're discouraged and we say, well, I'm just waiting for the spiritual breeze to blow through the building and suddenly I'll be energized and all zealous and passionate for the Lord again. And I don't think that's how a process works.
No, you've got to do first. That's what God has repeatedly said to Elijah. It's what he said to Paul. It's what he said to Titus. Elijah. There's something to do, and that doing will help you get closer to God. That doing will help that character be refined. That doing will get that rainstorm that's been extinguishing your zeal. It'll diminish that so that fire can grow again.
Yeah, doing when you don't want to. Okay? Any of y'all remember exercising the first time?
Yeah.
I remember getting up 6 o'clock in the morning, going to the gym the first time. It's one of the hardest things I've done in my life, right? Because the feeling isn't there yet. And I remember getting up in the morning excited to go get a run in. But that's not the first day.
It's not the first
day. It begins by doing. Thanks so much for your careful attention tonight. We're going to have the kids come in and then a little period of singing before we're done this evening. Thank you, Philip, for helping us out with our zeal. We really appreciate your work with us this weekend.